Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, X-Men 97.
Let's do it.
Go ahead. I'm Alex. I was just giving a... I learned there's a pause there where Pete does the theme. So
it's crazy, and a lot of people think he's making that noise with his mouth, but he actually has a tiny flute. I'm Justin, the tiny flute of the podcast.
I'm Pete. And we are going to be talking about Life Death, Part 2, Episode 6 of Season 1 of X-Men 97. If you haven't watched it, though you probably have by now, go check it out on Disney+. Brief bit of recap. After the epochal events of the last episode, we are jumping to a couple of other characters. As we suspected, we are following Storm and Forge as Storm regains her powers. In one half of the episode... The other half of the episode, we're in space, baby, with Charles Xavier and the Shi'ar and the M-Kron crystal and a couple of other things that are pronounced real weird if you've just been hearing them in your head for a very long time. But by the end of the episode, Charles Xavier has decided to head back to Earth. Storm and Forge have found out about what happened in Genosha, and we get the big reveal. Not a huge shocker here, but the dude behind the attack on Genosha is none other than Mr. Sinister. So there you go.
Yeah, we're going to see those nasty boys coming out.
After the huge last episode of the show that left everybody reeling, how did you feel about this one? Justin?
It makes a lot of sense after an intensely emotional episode that you're going to want to refresh it and, you know, sort of like a palate cleanser of complete insanity. You know what I'm talking about? Like, after you've had a long day at work, you go home and just run your head into the wall a couple times just to be like, this is what I should be doing to relax.
I'll tell you what's a real palate cleanser for me is, you know, I was feeling a lot of things going into this episode and wasn't sure how to feel. But as soon as we got that Marvel flip right into that X-Men theme song and logo, I was feeling great again.
Pete, I gotta say, I don't know if you like television, but I know you love opening credits. I feel like that's what you should watch. That's what you should be watching. Why fill it up with all these, like, they're just post-credits sequences, except it's post-opening credits instead of post-closing credits.
Justin, I don't know if this is what you were getting at, but I actually, just before we got on, watched the episode again with my kids who hadn't watched it yet. They're super into the show. They're loving it, even with the deadly events in the last episode. They can't wait to watch the next one, but they did wait, so there you go. But watching the Xavier stuff in particular, I was totally struck by, like, how do you describe the X-Men to people? Because I was thinking in my head, I was like, well, they're just five kids and they have got powers and everybody hates them. They protect the world. The end.
I'm so sorry, Alex. That is so wrong. Literally that would describe the painting in one scene in this series.
Well, that's the only thing. 100%. Like, that's what I'm saying is that, like, thinking back to the genesis of the X-Men, when they created it, being like, They're kids with powers, and everybody hates them, but they protect the world anyway. And every week, they fight somebody different. This one is like Charles Xavier is in space with a bunch of bird people who are conquerors. They're a metaphor, probably, for the British Empire in a certain sense. And, by the way, Scott Summers' evil brother, who is also in space that he probably doesn't know about, is there, but he doesn't have any dialogue. In addition, the bird people actually probably birds. By the way, in the background, I don't know if you noticed the chameleons. They first popped up in Power Pack. Charles Xavier could walk, but only because of his power armor. And by the way, he's going to take him into the astral plane where he's going to see Skeleton Gambit. He's going to show up and he'll be like, well, got to head back. Can't stop this thing that's happening with Deathbird, Queen Laurentia's evil sister.
I'm so sorry. We have nothing else to speak on. That's the episode. This podcast is over.
It's insane. It's insane because, like, it's all in the comics, mind you. But it was just striking me very hard watching this episode, being like, this went some wild places from where it
started. It went hard.
It went hard all the way. Gotta say, I feel like we often say, like, I mean, it makes sense. It was in the comics. That doesn't work.
No.
We have to reexamine that. Because watching this episode, I was like, this was in the comics, but this is crazier. It's crazy we read this as kids and we're like, cool. And watching on TV in the condensed version, it's like drinking the Kool-Aid dust that you would get straight. I was like, holy shit. How can anyone tolerate this storyline?
Yeah, I can definitely. I liked it. My kids by the end were like, yeah, we're into this, and had some questions about how Storm got her costume and hair back, which I'm sure we'll get into in a second.
But those are lightning clothes. Yes.
No, they're made out of the owl. I think Beau DeMeo, the showrunner of the show, said this online, that she turned the adversary into her hair and clothes.
That makes less sense. And it was his idea. That's his idea.
Yes. Regardless of that or anything, just like I could feel them getting a little shifty during the space sequences is what I was getting at.
Well, it's a lot to explain, especially like the opening shots of Charles where it's like you see the wheelchair, like dramatic music. I mean, you had to explain all that, like, well, he can't walk, but we're seeing him walk and it's kind of crazy.
They understood that part.
Really?
Yeah, they've seen people in wheelchairs before.
Oh, wow, okay.
Did you explain to them the race of bird aliens?
Nope. My favorite shot in the whole episode, by the way, was they took off Laundra's helmet and her hair was the same shirt.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That's comedy.
I knew that from the comics, but it was still great.
How about Ronan hanging out?
How
do you feel about Ronan? And a character that is a known, like if you're watching the MCU, and you watch this show, what do you know about this this episode? Ronan. That's the only thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ronan, and you also know what's going on with Forge's magic. I know we're jumping all over the place here, but
yes,
that was very surprising to me.
That was a moment, and let's talk about this sort of more in depth, because that took me out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it makes sense. I liked it, I guess. But I was like, wait a second, those aren't supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a little bit of disjunction whenever a show that is literally set in the past touches something that I think, no matter the fact that this is coming out now, in our brains, this is happening long ago and Doctor Strange is now. So, like, they shouldn't be the same.
Talking about when Forge uses his powers and looks like Doctor Strange using his powers.
So... Storm is being attacked by the adversary. Forge comes in with his magic book.
You mean the giant evil ghost hawk?
It's an owl. Definitely. They said that several times. Comes in with the magic book. He casts the spells. He's got the whole orange Doctor Strange things going around his wrist. He uses a magic portal that he sends the adversary into. All that stuff is straight up MCU visuals, 100%. And at the same time this week, just to add like a little more fuel to the conspiracy fire, they also added X-Men 97 on Disney Plus into the MCU multiverse rail. So like, but to your point, Justin, the thing that I was thinking about is like, yes, of course this is part of the MCU multiverse because it's all part of the multiverse. Like I think, again, that's something we just accept by knowing how this media works. So the comics are a universe and animated series are different universes, whatever else. And that's fine. They don't need to interact, but it is a little bit of like, I feel like you're forcing it into this MCU thing that doesn't quite work for me.
Well, and I don't mind the force because I get that. It's just that from a storytelling perspective, it's like, wait a second, why? Because he could be doing any sort of magic. But then again, from their perspective, they're like, yeah, Ford uses magic here. And I'm like, well, why don't we make it Doctor Strange magic? And they're like, oh, of course. Yeah. So it all makes sense. It just is it's a weird juxtaposition or disjunction between these two things.
Well, this is on the same bed, and this is going to say something without letting you guys getting too angry at me. There's a lot of stuff that felt disjuncted about this episode to me. And it wasn't just that we were on two trains. I understand why we're here. I understand why we went to these other characters so that we can start to bring everybody back together to the three-part finale. Obviously, it was important to see what happens with Storm. It's great to bring Charles Xavier back into the fold. But it felt stilted to me, and it felt like, even for the fast pace of the show, we were going through a lot of different things. Like, why does Forge, a guy who is all about technology and building things, also have a magic book that he casually uses magic? And maybe this was me getting stuck on what we thought was going to happen for the last episode, but when it turns out the giant owl demon is actually a real owl demon who actually bit Forge, that threw me as well. It felt like, I don't know, it felt like we were losing track of the metaphor a little bit. If it's like, yes, I am the metaphorical demon who haunts you, but also I'm a real demon that Forge could battle with magic, which he has now. So it was a lot of things to throw in there that I felt confused.
Also, it was weird to me that I got a little confused because it was like we went out of our way to banish the evil owl. And it was like, okay, that's done. But then the evil owl came back and I was like, well, why did we do that if he's just going to come back anyway?
You know, well, because they were in Snow Snake Chimney, I believe is what it was called. And
oh, okay.
That's where owls live.
And that's where owls live. All right, that makes sense. Yeah. So when you kill an owl, it goes back to its home. And if
you don't kill an owl.
Yeah, why do you need to know the answer to that?
Oh, okay. And also, Pete, I believe it's not an owl. It's a ghost hawk.
Okay, yeah, you're correct. You're correct. Thank you for correcting me on that.
I wanted to say it's a little bit of like taking like Forge's whole thing. He literally, his mutant power is like machines. He's the Donatello of the X-Men.
Yeah.
So to be like, we know what he does in this episode that's important, magic, the opposite of machines. It's like, what? The one thing he should be doing is machines and not he should be bad at magic.
But also, do you think it's weird that like if let's just say I'm dying somewhere, right? And you went to go get some magical flower that grows in tight spaces.
Which I would. I would.
Oh, thank you. And
is this in Snow Snake Chimney?
Yes, it is. Of course, because that's the only place that they grow. But then why have this like powerful transformation and fly around? You know what I mean? Because like he's still back there dying and I can't enjoy this amazing transformation because I'm like, are you going to go back to Forge and like give him the medicine? Because it seems like a mute point at this point.
Sorry, Pete, real quick. So the flower that cures eating too many garbage plates, which is what's killing you.
Right.
It grows in the same place that this flower grows in.
When he's talking flower, he's referring to salad.
Yeah. I don't know. What's that thing that's like a flower? Is it made of flowers? You mean a salad? Yes, that's the thing. It's like all the flowers are mixed together and there's goop on it.
I just feel like it's the Seinfeld episode where it's like somebody stops to get juju fruits instead of like going immediately to help the person who's dying. You know what I mean? Like
I definitely felt that as well. It was to be clear, great sequence.
Storm getting his powers back. Awesome.
But so I couldn't enjoy it because I'm like, what about Forge?
Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you. I was thinking that the entire time, too. I was like, she's going very far. He's dying back there in that moment.
And did she get the flower? We never really saw her get it in between the transformation.
But let's remember that Storm's powers work where wind comes and she just rides it. So it's like, she's like a flying squirrel. They can't always control which way they're going.
That's, you know what I mean? No, it seemed like she could control where she was going very well.
The wind is, she's just whipping in the wind.
But so did the wind bring her the flower? Because we never really saw her like.
Well, I think maybe this gets closer to the thing that was bothering me about all this stuff is there were so many things that happened that seemed surreal, like the house breaking apart and Storm being put into the coffin. It was hard to tell what was real and what was not real, down to the sequence where she breaks out of the chimney, turns the owl into her clothes and hair, and then flies through, I don't know, various animals and the sea and everything.
All the lands all over the world, it seemed like.
Right. And, but this gets also to like the disparity we're talking about, where I was trying to decipher, would this work for me in a comic book? And I think probably, but it didn't work for me on screen.
Well, and let me say, I think it was meant to be that way. It's just strange because of the pairing of these two. We have this sort of austere, like court intrigue stuff playing out with Professor X in space. And then this very metaphorical, like, dream logic.
You're talking about space school, where he took everybody to space school?
Yeah. Man, what a flex for Professor X.
Yeah.
Professor Flex. Yeah, Professor Flex is what I'm talking about.
He's eating an apple, taking his time. I'm like, come on, dude. We're all in this magical plane. Can
Professor
we get to
X is like, Professor X is like, how am I going to, like, befriend all these bird people? I need to, like, ingratiate myself. And he's like, hey, fuckers, you're in school and I'm in charge. I was like, yo, cool it, dude. This is not the way.
Yeah, yeah. This is the opposite of what you should be doing.
But sorry, that we're off track. I literally sidetracked myself. The dream logic all about Storm stuff, I think, does work internally. It's only in comparison to the Professor X stuff that it felt a little weird to me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. The let's talk about the space stuff a little bit. I'll throw something else out at you guys. I have never
been to space.
I've never been to space. Have you guys been to space?
I knew it.
Of course. Pete and I went to space together.
What? Yeah, that was nice.
Space camp, right?
When we were on our comic book cruise ship and you were with your family, we did an excursion where we went to space.
That's expensive, usually.
Expensive excursion, Professor Flex. We're Professor Flex.
I've never bought Xavier and Lilandra as a romantic relationship. It just doesn't work.
What?
Do you like it?
I like it in practice, but I do agree with you. In when they were talking to each other, I was like, these people aren't having sex.
What are they doing? 100% not.
It was kind of hilarious, the line that got him. It was like, do you renounce your X-Men? You know, and he was like, well, I was going to say yes, but I mean, the way you worded that, I really can't. So,
yeah,
it was powerful, but there was also a little bit of it. It's like the way they were kind of like really gnawing at him. It was pretty funny.
It's X-Men or sex, man, and he chose X-Men.
Can I throw out a theory at you guys based on this?
Oh, shit.
This section convinced me that Magneto is alive.
Oh.
And the reason
I believe that, I don't know. Oh, because of.
Well, they spent a lot
of
time talking about, not a lot of time, but a fair amount of time talking about Magneto and how important he was to Xavier. And then they cut very specifically to just Gambit's skeleton, which I understand he's talking about his students. And it strikes me as like, oh, God, this happened to one of my students. But I feel like Gambit 100% dead, sacrificed himself. That's going to haunt everybody for the rest of the season. Magneto somehow is coming back, whether Cable saved him and the Morlocks at the last second, whether he comes back in some other form or something like that. We're going to see him again.
I think you missed the lesson. The lesson was clearly that marriage doesn't work because one person's going to ask you to give up hanging out with your friends and the other person's not going to want to do that. You know what I mean? And it's a real decision that you have to make.
The lesson of the episode was don't till legs.
These are all great lessons. Wait, Pete, just real quick. You're considered the X-Men to be Professor X's like buddies?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, do you ever say to your friends, like, to me, my friends, and they all, like, stand behind you and you go do something?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, you know, when your professor would sit down backwards on his chair and put his hair backwards and be like, I'm going to talk to you.
Put his hair backwards?
Put his hair backwards. What is this, a Lego?
Whoa, what the fuck? What kind of? Just take their hair, turn it around backwards. Ooh, it's fun time.
Sounds like you went to a school in the astral plane, Alex.
you guys. I don't think you know how hat owl beasts. Owl beasts that turn their heads all the way around.
Okay, yeah? I think they're called ghost hawks, Alex. I hate to keep correcting you. I mean, sorry. I feel like we're talking about everything all at once.
Yeah.
But I think we're overlooking the fact that Professor X and Gambit have an extremely close relationship, clearly, because he saw his corpse and he was like, I have to leave my love in space and go back because my buddy Gambit
is dead. I mean, it was a space
plane. His costume was intact, which is pretty cool. It just turned his body into a skeleton.
I feel like that's because Professor X and Gambit, how many times do you think they've actually spoken to each other in real life? Have they had two conversations? I feel like he's like, oh, yeah, your room's upstairs.
He didn't say his name when he saw his skeleton. He was just like, oh, God, you.
That would be crazy, though. Every time one of your friends dies, you see their skeleton in a nightmare dream, and that's how you know they're dead.
That's what happens to me.
Oh, wow.
Do you guys like Skeleton Gambit? Do you think that's a good character?
I hope he comes back.
Me too.
It seemed less annoying than regular Gambit.
Boo.
Wow. Ooh. Negative.
Too soon?
How dare you talk about the dead?
On a very similar note, how I know this show got me and like has me right now is when they played the opening credits and it got to Nightcrawler, I was like, oh!
Same. I was like, what? I couldn't believe we didn't get to see Nightcrawler after he was featured. I was like, how dare you?
I'm so glad we're talking about the credits again, because it is really just a wonderful mix of information to get you excited about the show. But the hype music, I mean, the hype music is real.
Pete, I've never actually listened to the music. See Nimrod in the opening credits, your favorite
I fucking hate Nimrod.
How about Nimrod Bishop? Is that what we're getting to? Are we getting a Cable Bishop?
I don't even know at this point. Those opening credits? Like, totally unclear. Some of it is information. I feel like the stuff that they repeat multiple episodes is the thing you need to concentrate on. Like we talked about the last time, they keep ending with the swirling sinister around Morph. That feels like something that clearly is starting to really pay off. They've had at least two credit sequences where they do that zoom into Forge. And again, that feels like, okay, there's more to do with Forge here. That's important. But the rest of the stuff, I'm like, I don't know why Nimrod was in the middle of a Master Mold. What's happening?
I feel like they're saying Master Mold, big thing from last episode. Nimrod is the progressive step. But I guess I think it just means that we're all heading toward Nathan Cable, because that's the only thing that sort of unifies this wild ass season that we've been watching of this show.
I mean, they're not slowing down ever, I don't think, after seeing this episode. I was kind of holding out hope that we would do a couple crazy episodes and then kind of slow things down to deal with all the madness. But it's pedal to the metal, man.
Bro, this was the slowdown episode. I got bad news for you. Dude, this was the one to chill out in.
There was nothing slow about this episode.
This is like settling into a hot tub when it comes to this story. Because right now we're getting out and we're slapping asses and running naked through the streets of X-Men Town. Because that's what these next three episodes are all about.
Streaking? Streaking in the quad?
It's all nude all the time going forward from here on out.
Do you think KFC is still open?
What did you think of the reveal that it was Sinister behind the attack on Genosha?
I think we all thought, at least the three of us, thought it was going to be Sinister here. So, like, I like the reveal here. I would not like it if it was two episodes later and we had to spend time there. So to do that and then run headlong into what we're going to, I think, is good.
Hey, when you were in space school, do you think it's weird that the teacher's yelling at you, calling you a snake oil salesman when you don't really understand what that means? Because you're bird people. You know what I mean?
Earlier on in the episode, they called Earth a Milky Way ghetto. So I feel like they have a fair idea of certain casual phrases.
That hurt, by the way. Yeah, I was like, how fucking dare you?
Wow. How dare you, birds? I feel like I also wrote down interior freak fluids.
Yes.
Yeah, I wrote that down too. Yeah.
What's happening?
Who writes this show?
But here's something we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about anything. I talked about this yet.
We haven't talked about anything.
We haven't talked about anything.
I mean,
we talked
about everything. Yes.
But it's weird we haven't talked about the Imperial Guard.
Yeah.
Who were so badass in this episode. Gladiator,
dude, Gladiator
is
was
such
fucking
a
awesome.
Badass. And the fact that they spent so much time with them, I was like, hey, you guys know this isn't the X-Men, right? Because this episode had, like, no X-Men in it. But it had, like, all a lot of these guys screwing around. And we'll never see them again.
I thought it was hilarious that Charles sat down to have a heart-to-heart with Gladiator. And I was like, I don't think he gets conversation very much. So, like, good luck here, Charles. Like,
not a great wingman, Gladiator. Not a chill shoulder to cry on.
No. No.
It is wild to get back to the original point we were talking about, that almost literal space Superman shows up and there's no explanation whatsoever. It's just like, gotta roll with it. He's purple. He's got a mohawk. Enjoy.
Exactly. Plus, they're like, you like Superman? Well, how about if he looked crazy? If he looked like Doodle from your
mohawk,
junior high notebook. It's, of course it's sick. But it's sort of like, wait, Storm lost her mohawk and Gladiator has one?
We have a quota of mohawk that we got to maintain.
One mohawk. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think Vulcan is going to come back in any form? And for anybody listening doesn't know, I legitimately cannot explain the continuity of Vulcan in any particular way other than he is the third Smothers brother who lives in space. He's super
powered. Third Smothers brother.
Smothers brother.
That's what I heard, too. Yeah. That is what I heard.
That's what I meant. The end. That's the end
He's
of my point.
He's the yo-yo man.
Pete, and Vulcan is one of your favorite characters, so.
That's true, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Very powerful. I'm super excited for more Vulcan. Who isn't?
Well, let's just, if we can just list the Summers brothers, all the Summers family that we know of. Dad lives in space, flies around with the pirates, and is a real swashbuckler, real Han Solo type. Vulcan also lives in space, evil, very powerful. Cyclops, bad at interviews. That's all we know. Havoc also lives on Earth, was seen in Genosha earlier in the series, the original series.
Oh, okay.
Right? And then potentially a secret in the comic books brother named Adam X that has like sharp razor blades that he throws around.
Yeah. And Havoc
and the mom,
could come back. At some point, because we saw that X-Factor picture on Forge's wall. I will point to something that I was surprised they didn't do this, because the show has been so good about, like, tiny seating things. On the wall in Forge's workshop, I can't remember whether we talked about this last time, there was a picture of Forge back in his army days with his arm around somebody's shoulder, and the face is cut off, and it's very clearly Bastion, the guy who's, like, basically a cyborg, and I was actually convinced after reading into this, like, that Bastion was going to be the ultimate villain here, because Bastion is part cyborg. He can create prime sentinels, which are very similar to the sentinels that we saw in, like, X-Men Days of Future Past, if you only see the movies. And
he's sort of like a Nimrod Master Mold combo almost.
Yeah, exactly. And he is the lead bad guy in a crossover called Operation Zero Tolerance, which came out in 1997. So seeing all of these things, I had like a beautiful mind numbers thing.
Wow, look at you
like,
going.
It's got to be Bastion. Bastion's got to be the bad guy here. And it still could be, but
it still could be.
But then you realize this show is just insane, and trying to be logical about things doesn't make any sense.
Let me say, this show is insane, half predictable. Like, we called Sinister, we knew Life Death, it played out a little bit differently, but we knew sort of how this was going to go. We couldn't have predicted the the Shi'ar stuff, and have no idea where
we couldn't have predicted the Shi'ar stuff, but we also said last episode, this episode, we think Charles Xavier is going to come back.
That's true.
And I don't think that's a knock on the show by any points. It means that the middle of all the insanity, just like the best X-Men stories, you're still following something that has a logical plot progression from one point to another. So it's very well structured. Like, we talked about that with the fifth episode as well, where they set basically everything up to knock those dominoes down.
I mean, it's a smart move, because it's like, how do we make sure that the people who have loved these characters and read all the comics not be able to predict the show, just go insane pace and just fucking make huge choices. So
just reiterating, the pace does not bother me.
Yeah. Okay. We understand that.
Any other notes for the episode? Any other scenes or lines anybody wants to call out before we start to wrap up here?
Oh, man.
Pete?
Covered interior freak fluid. That's it. Yeah. I have horse people from Power Pack.
Yeah, chameleons. I was very excited.
I just think it's hilarious when you're meeting family. It's like, hey, this is my sister. She just wants my throne. You know what I mean? Don't worry about that at all. Let's just focus on our love.
Do you think the Shi'ar actually like hatch out of eggs? Because they're bird people. And at one point, they refer to how Lilandra was a hatchling. So like, yeah. are they eggs? Like, do they hatch out of eggs?
Is Professor X sitting on eggs? You think that's what he's up there doing?
Oh, yeah, probably.
That's how he proves his loyalty.
Fertilizing eggs up in the old Shi'ar hen house. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a Professor Flex is in the hen house. You know what I'm talking about?
The I am lightning line that Storm did gave me chills. I mean, that was great. Just such a unbelievable.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Weirdly, and I didn't pick up on this when I watched it, but again, this is, I believe, Bo DeMeo came out and said this. They were inspired for that sequence with Storm by Superman's first flight in Man of Steel.
Hmm.
Which is weird.
Okay. I mean, it kind of makes sense the way she's kind of flying around like, hey, dear, what's up? Like, oh, I'm going to touch this.
Well, no,
water.
It's very, like, that's whatever else I think about Man of Steel, that first flight sequence is awesome. It's really, really well done. And it very much like the going through the clouds, sonic boom type thing. It really does show off there. But great sequence. Why don't we wrap
also,
up?
The one line, the adversary saying you fear living was such a like really kind of powerful, cool line. I thought.
What did you think about the adversary turning into demon X-Men faces in the coffin? Is that what you would like to see if you were trapped in a coffin?
Oh, I think when you die, you have to fight your way out of a coffin for sure. You know what I mean?
To come back to life.
Yeah, you got to face all your demons.
Most people don't.
Most people
don't. Yeah, that's why they're still dead. You know what I mean?
Great to know there's an option.
Yeah, I'm gonna talk to the cemetery about that option later on tonight. Before we wrap up, let's go to our vision.
I'm
going to
specifically ask, I want you guys to make sure this happens too. When I get buried, that you got to kind of have like, you know, like one of those tools that kind of like jacks that I can like in my coffin. So when I'm trapped in there, I have something to open it with.
Jacks, you know? Like the little ball you throw and then you pick the
like a car jack, you know, for like what you use on a tire to kind of jack it.
Oh, you mean jacks from Street Fighter.
Yeah. That will work. Or just throw a crowbar in
there.
That's
a very popular option, I'm told. It's very expensive though.
Yeah, if people throw crowbars into my coffin.
Are you being buried in like a 1940s Disney cartoon? Is that what's happening?
Sure. I mean,
you got like a little.
If you guys can make that happen, that'd be great.
Justin, if you could be buried with one character from Street Fighter, who would it be?
Yeah. And why is it Jax?
I guess. I think Dhalsim could punch a. He could punch.
I'd choose Blanca. Cup. I think that would be kind of terrifying, but.
They can keep the lights on.
Exactly. Scary down there. Let's go to our vision board where we talk about what's coming forward or what we want to come forward. Pete, what's on your vision board for the next episode?
Oh, well, I don't know if we're going to get. I feel like sometimes they give us the teaser at the end, but they don't then do it the next episode. Maybe they'll wait a little bit. But I do think that, you know, you had mentioned Cypher, so I'm wondering if we're going to get a little Cypher cameo.
Did I mention Cypher?
You said the word Cypher at some point today.
Okay. You do sign off with that every time.
Yeah, but I do think we're going to get some more fun cameos, but it'd be nice to check in with Rogue. You know what I mean? I'm a little worried about her mental state right now, so that would be cool. But yeah, I think it's going to be Charles coming back to Earth and kind of getting shit together.
It's the finale rack. We're setting it up. Professor X coming back. I feel like here my prediction is we're going to follow his POV and he's going to come back in and see all of the devastation that's happened. We're going to get back to Magneto. He's going to be like, I really needed you, and you weren't there. And then they're going to rally together and face off again, build up to the finale against Sinister. And from what we know, the finale is even more intense than the big episode from two ago.
You got me real excited because for a second I thought you were saying it's like going to be the movie Face Off with Charles Xavier and Magneto. But that's not what you're saying.
You want them to wear each other's faces?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it could happen. Anything could happen in the show. I mean, like you were saying, Justin, we know that the last three episodes are Tolerance is Extinction, part one, two, and three. So we are headed to that three-part finale here. But I'm hoping, since we had Life Death part two this episode, that we're going to get Motendo part two next episode, possibly Super Motendo, if you will.
Oh, my God.
I think it could happen.
I've never heard someone make a prediction and be like, wow, that's totally wrong. Most predictions have a little bit of validity.
Right, though. You have no idea.
You never know. Yeah. Anything could happen.
That's I'll true. Eat my hat.
Ooh. I would like
that was my favorite Super Nintendo game, actually.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Yeah, that was the one marketed to exclusively retirees.
It didn't really play out very well. You had to use the power pad, though, which wasn't compatible. If you'd like to support...
Wait. If you lose...
Yes.
No. If you lose, Justin, you're going to have to actually eat a hat. What are you going to do? Are you going to put some barbecue sauce on it? Are you going to go A1 steak sauce? Like, what are you
going to...
You're going to go straight hat?
Macaroni salad... ketchup,
fries,
whatever other garbage. You said.
Oh my God, some hot sauce on top.
Would you eat, Pete? Would you eat a garbage plate served in a hat?
Probably, yeah.
Surely that's been done at some local Rochester baseball team.
Yeah, yeah.
If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about X-Men 97, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
You know, the Rochester Red Wings does have a uniform where they have garbage plates on them. So it's funny you said that.
Oh, is it that the logo or do they just get garbage plates all over?
Yeah, that's just a stain of food on their jersey.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Vim, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.